Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And today on the show, we have Joan Michelle. Hey, Joan.
Hey.
Hi, Joan. Hey, thanks for joining us. It was nice to meet you in real life last week at the meetup.
Oh, that's
so
right.
This is exciting to have you on our show finally.
I know.
Can you give our listeners who may not know you kind of a background on yourself and how you got into photography and stuff like that?
This is like a long, long story, but
love it. We love long stories.
I'm at the point in my life where I kind of don't necessarily know what to categorize myself right now because I'm transitioning from photography and filmmaking, but I still do both. And at the same time, I guess my story, how I would start it, is that when I was 17, I didn't know necessarily what I was going to major as in college. And instead, I bought a DSLR at the time, and my teacher told me, oh, why don't you do something with it? Like, you keep taking photos with your classmates. And then so I decided that I would major in photography. So I went to school in School of Visual Arts and majored in photography. And that was my first experience doing film photography, because when you go to school there, your first year is strictly black and white photography, and then your spring semester is color. So I got to really learn how to just take photos and develop and print, and I missed that a lot.
Oh man.
Yeah,
so jealous. So
me
jealous
too.
And a lot of art schools don't have those facilities anymore, so I was very fortunate. And then after that, my second year, I did studio photography, and then I dropped out, which a lot of people kind of get confused because they're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So because I'm in school now, and when I dropped out, I decided that I wanted to assist more and gain more experience. And so I would work under a wedding photographer, which introduced me to a fashion photographer. And that's what I mainly do, is fashion editorial photography. And then afterwards, I just decided to freelance by myself for 6 years and had my own studio. And then after that, pretty much I went back to school now currently and decided that instead of just photography, to focus also doing video. And yeah, so like I was talking with Chris, that it's interesting because I don't just do digital video wise, I actually do it analog as well, which a lot of people don't still do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for me, it's like a torn situation because it's like I am known for my personal work. I don't really put my commercial work out there. So it's like sometimes I don't know what to tell people what I do. and then most of the time too, when I have to sign an NDA, it's like I can't even express or say what kind of projects I'm on until they're finally out. Yeah.
So are you in school for like, are you a director? Are you like going to be a camera operator?
That's like the biggest question too.
Yeah. Good.
So people automatically tell me, Joan, you're going to probably be a cinematographer, right? Because
right.
you do
yeah.
photos. And I'm like, not necessarily. I don't want to just, you know, assume that I'm going to do that type of job. So I've been actually experiencing other fields in film. And then at the same time, so I could kind of figure out for myself whether or not that's what I want to do. And I don't want to just like disregard other fields until I could really say that that's what I want to do. But as of right now, it's been more directing. And
cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Man, see, I have so many questions now that you just started off with that. Because I too love video work, and that kind of, I think the video thing is what got me into photography again, like later in time. And, you know, I don't know, like all my eggs are in this photography basket thing, and I don't really do the video stuff anymore. So when I do get to do it, it's just like, oh, this is, that's right, I love this too. Like, you know, you kind of, I don't know, it's such a tough thing when you're into two things like that, because mm-hmm. they really eat up like all your time. You know what I mean? Like whichever one you put your heart yep. and soul into, it just like takes you, grabs you, chews you up, spits you out. You know what I mean? Like it's just like, So just to hear that, you know, you're kind of balancing both is a good thing for me right now.
It gives you hope.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, I have some hope.
It's interesting, like a lot of people, I mean, you know, they always ask like, well, do you do video? And for a while I was like, no, I'm a photographer. Like, you know, like I had, was like, no, that's for video people to do. But now I'm like, you know, with the YouTube channel, I'm like, I actually do enjoy that aspect of it. And like one of my major pipe dreams was to like direct something someday. So like, that's really cool that you're like, yeah, like Timothy said, like doing both, because it's like, yeah. We shouldn't limit ourselves really, you know, we can be both.
Sometimes I question myself when I take a photograph. The obstacle is always trying to capture everything in a photograph. But then at the same time, if I could do a video which can emulate all of that mm-hmm. with motion, then, you know, why not? I wouldn't take it as a shortcut, but it's also just a different way of trying to express whatever it is that I'm trying to show. And sometimes I also get this comment where people think that you have to do one or the other mm-hmm. or at the same time. Sometimes you have to do both in order to get hired.
Right.
And for me, it's like I enjoy both. So I don't think of it as a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My thing is I haven't put enough time into the video aspect of it. So I don't want to take a job and be like, yeah, I can do both, and be like, like on set freaking out or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally relate to that, especially when I kind of get upset when people just take on a job when they're not really have that expertise behind or a background on that job.
Right.
For me, I feel like if people really took the time to do a certain job, I feel that they should be entitled, you know, to do it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and just to say that you have a camera and that you're able to do it and then do a bad job, then it just makes everyone else look bad in a way. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah, yeah. So let's back up. Let's back up a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
You were talking about also doing analog video. So what are you shooting, like Super 8, like VHS? What are you doing? What are you shooting analog video?
So I went back to school. I went back to college just to finish my undergrad. People would be like, oh, you're doing your master's. Like, no, I'm doing my undergrad. And I wanted to just make my mom's one dying wish come true.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I just, like, for her, it's like, no matter how much I get published or all the jobs that I do, it's like, it's just not enough. It doesn't
right.
comprehend to her compared to a degree. So now I'm majoring in film, and because I have experience working on set, all the students are much younger than me. Uh-huh. And like, I don't ever want to make them feel bad, because, you know, when they see my projects and then compare theirs, you know, it's obviously at a different level, but we're at like in the same class. So the faculty in my department is very nice to me that they let me just take whatever classes I want. I don't have to follow the curriculum.
Oh,
because,
wow.
Yeah, because I've proved that I know what I do. And
oh, so that's
one,
awesome.
Yeah. So one of the classes was a 16 millimeter class, and I didn't even know my school even had that. So the class is pretty much, you learn how to shoot with a Bolex or a Arri-S, and we have the table where you cut and splice, so it's really hands-on. And then you know, you have the old monitor trying to figure out how you want to put the film together. They don't let you do it in post on digital. So then,
Wow, that's awesome.
And then they screen your film at an old school movie theater that actually the Joker film was shot. I was an extra, but I wasn't in that scene.
Rad.
So it was pretty mind blowing because my first year, now going back to school last year, when my 16mm got chosen and it was screened in this old movie theater, it just like blew my mind, the fact that one day, you know, one of my work could be like
yes.
an AMC theater or something like that. Yes. I don't know. Yes. So it made my like dream like closer to reality. And then a small world, long story short, I'm hosting a film club in my school, and I was like going to every class telling them about encouraging students to join. And then one of the professors, she was like, oh, you know, I really liked your 16mm last year. And then so to encourage the students to, you know, be fulfilled with the idea that, you know, they shouldn't dread school because you never know what could happen. So that 16mm film, despite how experimental it was, led me to get a job and do behind the scenes for Sierra at Met Gala.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I told everyone, I was like, you never know your school assignment, despite you could post it on YouTube or Instagram. You don't know who's going to see it. And you know, you never know. Like for me, I was in the middle of finals, and then I get a phone call. It's like leaving class, and her producer. So small world, I actually do know her hairstylist. It's not like out of the blue. but he happened to see my 16mm film, and I guess he showed it to her, and they asked me if I could document her in film. And I was like, that's not gonna happen, especially with nowadays everyone wants things instantly. So fact that if I filmed her, she wouldn't get the result right away. So I said that, you know, I could do my best to emulate it in a sense, but yeah, it's just the idea that I did this project for myself, and I didn't know that it would, you know, get to somewhere bigger. And then the fact that right after taking exam, I have to like Uber now to New York and like grab all my camera equipment. And I never met her. So it was very like nerve-wracking because it's like everything was so new and I don't know what to expect. I was like, I don't know if she's nice or mean or I don't know. But it actually turned out really good. And then the crazy thing is like she asked me to join her in the car to go on the red carpet where, you know, everyone's known for like standing and taking photos and stuff like that. And I got out of the car and then I saw all these celebrities. I just got starstruck. Yeah, because I was just like, I'm supposed to be doing my job, but then like there's like, you know, Dwayne Wade right in front of me.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, how can I function right now? But like I said, I just, you know, like to share that story because I just feel that a lot of people sometimes feel like they do personal work and they just think that, you know, it's for nothing. It's just for themselves, which is also a good thing. You know, sometimes you have to fulfill that creative urge, but sometimes you never know too. It could go somewhere else. Yeah.
That's such a good story. Right? Like, I'm glad you shared that, because it's just amazing like how far like passion and stuff that you like personal work, you know, like I'm so passionate about that stuff. And, you know, just the fact that somebody saw it, got it in the right hands, boom, boom, boom. Next thing you know, you're standing next to The Rock on the red carpet.
It's just wild how you never know.
Like you never know.
That's so cool.
How do you feel like your photography fits into your like cinematography and all that stuff? Like, how do you soup all that together and kind of make it work?
So when it comes to creating short films that I'm working on, I have a Moleskine that is designated to storyboarding. So when I storyboard for my films, sometimes I'll take photos from other movies or photos that I see on Instagram, anything that I know for sure I want the scene to look like. So that's still that photograph. Yeah. Will eventually, you know, accumulate because once you have, let's say, once you capture or collect, let's say, 10 photos, those 10 photos will be the D photos that will project what it is going to like look like as a whole. I wish I could just like whoop out my moleskin and then everyone can see this, but everyone's just hearing my voice. But that's how I usually kind of intertwine photography. Well, still wise to, I guess, more video. I don't know if you also mean like lighting and stuff like that too.
Yeah, because those are like kind of two different beasts almost, like portrait lighting and like cinema lighting.
Yeah, in a sense. For me, I just see it all the same for some reason. Good. Yeah, because for me, the other day we were location scouting for a short film that we're actually going to film Thursday. And the way how I see, let's say when I'm walking around and I see a scene where I feel like I want to photograph, is kind of the same idea or concept when I want to film it as well. So I don't think of it very differently.
That's good.
Yeah, I get that. I feel like I don't see any differently if I'm doing video or photo, like it's all kind of the same.
Well, the only reason why I brought that up is because like doing stills on movie sets and like watching these grips set up like all these crazy lights, you know, and like, you know, I'm like, damn, I wish I should shadow a grip for a day and just be like, show me all your ways of cinema lighting,
man. You know, that's like, you should soak it all in, man. It is just more help to do, you know, more things kind of thing.
Right.
Cool.
Joan, I wanted to ask you, do you still have your studio? I saw that you were like sharing a studio a while ago.
Yeah, so our studio is called Armory Lab. It's in an art museum here in Jersey City, New Jersey. I share it with 5 other guys. It's literally, I'm the only female. They call me the Queen Bee.
Love it.
Nice.
And, at least take it, respect.
And I originally had, you know, a studio before with my best friend. And it's just like from one location to the other, you know, it's the fact that where we have our studio right now, it's like pretty much like in the middle of the city where there's a lot of other artists. And the fact that you just can't beat it. Instead of just having it in a warehouse kind of scene, it's in an art museum facility. And all of my studio mates are all analog photographers too.
Oh, wow.
And
oh,
nice. So it's cool that we share that passion to shoot analog. And this is pretty much it.
I'm like dreaming of a studio space. As of late, I'm like trying to figure out some other projects for the future. But yeah, your studio is like, someday.
For me, ever since I got to work in a studio, it made me kind of not. It was very hard for me to adjust photographing outside. I don't know if other people relate to that, but I get that comment a lot too, where some people they would ask me, oh, how do you do studio lighting? Because I always just shoot outside. I don't have a studio. Whereas me, it's like, I feel like I've been so used to shooting inside the studio that I don't know how to shoot outside. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I was feeling the photo itch the other day. So I basically was like, babe, let me take your picture. So we just like set up a studio in our kitchen. Like, it's like our kitchen's also the living room, so it's like one big wide space, but there's a pole right in the middle that like just is in the way. So in my old apartment I was able to like move the couch and have all the space, but that damn pole like messes everything up. So I'm like, I need to get back into an actual studio. I need the space,
you know. Like that's the one thing that I like about when I listen to podcasts or interviews, is because I like to hear the backstory of how people started their journey. And for me, talking about studio, it's one thing when people are like, wow, you have a studio. But, you know, I remember having to photograph always at my house. And so I totally relate to what you said. And it got to the point where I just kind of got self-conscious and I didn't want everyone to be at my house.
Yeah, I used to. I photographed a band of 5 guys and a girl in my parents' living room.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like with my dad like walking around.
No, my dad like would carry the backdrop stands with me, and I'd be like, no, not that wall, this wall. And we were just like circling the whole room until we could figure out like where would the best lighting be. And like my dog walking around. It's just like, it was just too much. And yeah. I was just like, okay, now we really need to like get a real studio.
Yeah. It makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've only ever shot in a studio one time, and it was with this like contortionist girl. And
oh yeah,
it was her idea. You know, we were just like talking through Instagram and stuff, and it was like, we need to do some photos together sometime. And she was like, I know this awesome place. And I go there, and he's like, do you want me to pull lights for you? Do you want me to do this? And I'm just like, what is this world right now? Yeah. Like, people are, you know, like, it can be that easy. Like, I don't have to, you know, like, walk all over town and trying to find a little nook to do a portrait session or something. Like, it's, oh, man. Yeah, I wish I did more of that, because, you know, there's so much to learn on that aspect of things, too.
Yeah. Something, experience that I could share is that there's like the pros and cons with photographing, let's say, people outside or in studio. For me, I was just saying to someone the other day that when it comes to creating a photo shoot or a test shoot in studio, like, I get so stressed out planning like the whole team and coordinating it, and then when it's like outdoors, it's more of like trying to find a place to like get ready and like do other things. And so, you know, there's like the ups and downs in doing one or the other.
I actually have a shoot tomorrow, and I like went out and kind of walked around the neighborhood and like took pictures with my phone of like possible spots, and we'll see how it goes tomorrow. Should be good.
Well, I mean, since this is a film photography podcast, we should probably talk about your film photography a little bit. What kind of stuff are you shooting? Like, what are your cameras, your film stocks, your fun in film photography? What are you doing with that stuff?
So when it comes to film photography, oh man, I feel like the biggest camera hoarder sometimes that I had to stop.
Talking to the biggest right here.
No, I saw Chris's tweet, and I was like, oh no. I was like, I relate to this too much. And to the point where I really needed to stop, because over here in Jersey, we have a lot of thrift stores. When I went to Cali last year, like, it was like bare. Like, I went to every thrift store I could go to, and there was like nothing. It's like everyone knew to like get the old film cameras there. Even in Rochester too, there's like no film cameras. Like, I really was like shocked. So in Jersey, luckily, like, I don't know now, I haven't gone, but I would always, that would be my first go-to. Even like, it got to the point where my mom already knew, like, before she would question, like, oh, you're here to buy clothes? I'm like, no, I'm trying to look for cameras. And so I have like a shelf that's filled with cameras, but I showed Chris, I had, when I went to the photo meetup in the city, I had the Canon EOS 1V. So we were talking about how, you know, the fact that it was compatible with the other the EF lenses, sorry. And that's why I got that camera, so I could use my DSLR lenses with a film camera. And then, but before that, I was always, if you watch my YouTube videos, I always usually use the Yashica Matte 124G. Because I always wanted the square format and the just to be able to hold a TLR. I don't know. It's just different.
Yeah, it is. It's so much fun. Yeah. I love shooting mine too.
Yeah. And small story with my Yashica Matte 124G. So like one, that sounds like a whole thing. when I went to Photoville last year, not this year, I didn't go. Last year, there was I think Joe Greer, he hosted like one of the Leica meetups, and everyone was, you know, so excited to meet him, and then they wanted to photograph him, and it was like the whole point of the meetups to get to know each other.
That's photographers for you.
Yeah, and then so, you know, I was just like minding my own business, photographing everything else. And then, you know, I was just like, okay, I'm here. And so it doesn't hurt to just get one photo of him. So then, and then it was pretty funny, because he didn't, you know, really wanted to like, you know, be in front of the camera for everyone. But then when he saw me holding my Yashica, like, he would, like, froze. He was like, oh my gosh, I really like that camera. Like, are you going to take a photo of me? And I was like, sure, you know? And so,
if you want.
Yeah. So then I did. And then I was just like, oh man, everyone's going to kill me now because they wanted to take a photo of him. And then I just happened to have the right camera, I guess.
Right. Yeah, you had the right one.
Yeah.
Man.
And my camera that I always usually bring when I walk around is my Canonet QL17. Yeah. It's interesting because I believe in, like, things are meant to be, as much as I like to thrift too, and it's easy, I guess, to go on eBay. But for me, it's like the cameras that I have an eye on, I feel like they have to magically appear. Like, right.
I love that.
Yeah, so I don't like to just, like, you know, buy it, because then it just ruins the spontaneity of it. Mm-hmm. And so when I got my Canonet, I was, like, looking on eBay and stuff, but then I was just like, oh, I don't want to bid and all these things. It's just too much work. And then the one day I went to Unique Photo, it was in the glass. And then I was talking to a sales associate. I was like, oh, is that a Canonet? He's like, yeah, I think it's like $50. And I was like, no way.
No way. $50?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, no way. And then I was just like, you know, for me, because of this addiction, I know the price is in my head. And so I was like, oh, it's a steal. I have to get it. Hopefully it works. That's, like, the biggest thing too. Hopefully it works.
Yeah, I know.
And then it does. So, and then now people are just like, oh, you have this camera. I'm like, yeah. But then I was like, I think it was meant for, like, me, because it was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if it wasn't, then it wouldn't be there. But yeah, those are most of, I don't have any point and shoots. I actually, like, sold all of those.
Really?
Yeah. I like, for me, when I went to Hong Kong, and then to know that it's such a hype to get point and shoot cameras, it's like, it kind of bothers me how expensive they are now.
Yeah, I know.
And so I don't know, it's like I was in the yesterday I was at the photo lab developing film, and then there was, like, so many kids with, like, disposable cameras, and I was like, you know, it's pretty much kind of the same concept a little bit. So it's like, if I really needed that, I would just get a disposable camera.
Did you have anything good that you let go?
I don't even want to think about it because it's gonna make me cry. Nothing like rare. When I was in LA though last year, I was at a coffee shop, and I remember this girl, she had to use the restroom, and she left, she had, like, the Miju, whatever,
epic. Yeah,
and she left it on the table, and she just went to go use the restroom, and I'm like, are you crazy?
Girl, what are you doing?
I was like, oh man, if I wasn't a good person, it would be gone. But no, she came back and the camera was still there. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. No, I'm looking at my stash of cameras. I'm like, you know, and I feel guilty. I want to see, that's what I told myself. Until I use all of these cameras or make a video with them for YouTube, I'm not going to buy more cameras. Yeah.
I feel the same way. I would go thrifting and would just have to buy everything they had just to kind of save it from being. And then I just find myself with, like, 50 cameras sitting in my closet in a like one of those Tupperware totes. And it's just like, am I ever going to use these? Like, so I kind of made a vow that I would stop buying every single thrifted camera. But if something, like you said, you know, there's a couple secret spots that we have around here still that aren't, like, all fished out. So, like, there's an occasional Yashica floating around in there, or, like, something cool. Like, there was a Canonet there. There was what was that other Yashica? It was, like, the rangefinder one, the Electro or whatever. There's an Electro there, a black one. And I said no. I was like, I was good about it. I was like, no, I'm not gonna spend the $60 and buy it, even though that's, like, a pretty good deal for what it is. Like, you know, I don't know. So I feel you there. I'm not going to buy anything else until I use what I have.
If you ever find a Yashica T4 or T5, like, there's certain ones that I would, you know, I'm secretly wishing that my time will come and my Yashica T4 for, you know, $1.50 will come my way.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing, like, a post on Reddit, or the infamous like a camera this girl thrifted or whatever for like $10 or something, and I was just like, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Or someone just made a meme just to like make everyone feel bad. Yeah.
Somebody sent me a message a while ago that they found a Contax T2 at a thrift store for like $10.
Wow.
And it was a gold one.
I don't believe that.
Come on. Right. And I saw something recently too on like Instagram. I forget what it was. Like somebody found something and they're like, shit you not, I found this. Like it wasn't this isn't a joke. And I kind of felt the same way. I was like, really? You really found that? This day and age with how popular this stuff is.
Aren't those days over? On. Feels like it.
Yeah. Feels like it. Man.
Yeah.
So you said a lab. You're at a lab. Do you do you develop and stuff, or you just send stuff to the lab like you were picking it up? Or do you ever do any developing at home, or do you have a dark room you go to or anything like that?
I haven't developed since I was in college, and I still have my tank and stuff, but I don't have the time.
Yeah.
I go to a film lab in Brooklyn. Shout outs to them because they are the nicest Chinese couple ever.
Yay!
Yeah, I really support small businesses. Not that I have anything against, anything franchise, but for me, it's like to know their story and the fact that they're, you know, been there for years, and that's, you know, all they've ever done as a business ever since they moved to America. So it's just such a great story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And love that. Yeah, I guess it does take time to develop, or I'd probably be developing every single day and stop stacking up on so much film. I feel like I'm so behind on developing. I still have film from when my parents were in town a couple weeks ago. It's like,
I don't know how you sleep without just like knowing that they're sitting there. Like,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I've heard on previous episodes, and then you always mention how you have film, like, you know, still awaiting. And for me, it's like, I have this urge to always go to the film lab. Like, as long as I have like maybe like three, like I don't want to just come in with one roll,
right?
But
like, I'll make a trip and then just develop, and then I actually scan it myself because I don't know, for some reason I feel like that's my therapeutic moment is like scanning and editing film compared to, I mean, also developing is too, but it's just a lot of more like managing to put all of the stuff together.
I found myself, you know, shooting the role, developing it two hours like after I got home, and I mean, it might as well just like shoot a digital camera if I'm gonna do it like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, if there's stuff that like I shot that I want to see, you know, I'm like, I know that shot's on there, I need to get to it, like, I'll prioritize my time and bang it out. But like lately, I've just kind of really been into letting it sit for a couple weeks and then developing it. It just feels more, I don't know, more special, you know, like it just seems like, oh yeah, it's a memory too. Like, I don't shoot for anything other than myself. And I know I've said it a million times. I just like, I like that fact of like, I'm in no hurry, you know, like this is just my love, my stress, my passion, my whatever. Like, I'm in no rush to see what's on there. Sometimes I am, don't get me wrong, but like most of the time I'm just kind of chilling.
For me, going with what you were saying, like I totally agree with the idea of like, you know, not knowing and then forgetting and then, you know, looking back and you remembering what you shot. I think maybe because me and Chris agree that making YouTube videos, it's like you have to like, you know, when you after you shoot, you feel like you have to develop it, because for me, it's like I have to, you know, put in my video or else it kind of won't be relevant anymore. Right. So it's like if Chris went to New York and then she posted it. Months later, it's like not the same.
No, I get that. I used to always incorporate my developing into my videos. When I used to make videos all the time, like, it would be a part of it, because I loved shooting that sequence. Was always my favorite time of shooting my little developing sequences.
We missed those, Timothy.
I was gonna ask you, like, why you haven't been, you know, on your YouTube channel.
Well, I just felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again. You know, you kind of just get in a groove and it feels safe. But I've really been working on something that I'm really proud of, that I I don't know. I've really been inspired by like long-term projects lately. Like not long-term, but like having something there instead of saying I'm going to do something. Cause it's so easy to be like, don't worry guys, I'm working on this video. It's going to be out next week. You know, like I really want, I have this project that I started just recently, like about a month ago, I started it and I started filming it from the beginning. I don't want to give too much away because I want it to kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and
people you gotta be like,
"Oh shit, he was doing something." Yeah, yeah.
Just drop it.
I'm coming out with the Film Photography Lemonade album, and it's going to, it's going to be hard. Like I can't wait. Like I'm so excited. I haven't even said anything to Chris about it. Like nobody knows what I've been doing, but I also want to do little things. But I feel like I need to get ahead first. Mm-hmm. I want to be like a chunk ahead of time with this project so I do go through with it. I have a real problem with like feeling like I'm cheating on a relationship when I'm working on YouTube because I love photography so much and I love shooting and I love like not having to worry about setting a camera up and catching things, that it was really taking away from my photography and I don't ever want it to be like that again. That's why I haven't made a YouTube video in a while, because I just love photography too much, you know?
That's but acceptable.
I am kind of, I'm filming something behind the scenes of something really cool that I've kind of teased throughout, but nobody knows that I've been teasing it. So it's kind of, it's fun. I don't know. You'll see. You'll see in about a month, I think, is when I'll start really pushing, or after Christmas, I'd say like 2020, just to really guarantee like it's going to come.
Woo!
But I probably have like 15 to 30 hours worth of footage of stuff that I've done. It involves music and involves like making a zine and like all kinds of stuff. Like I've already been working on it. I've kind of teased it on the show before, but like, again, I just don't want to be like, it's going to be out Thursday.
Yeah.
Because there's
so
much pressure of it not being what I want it to do. Like there's so many times I've uploaded videos just because I had to, because there are people like waiting for it. And I don't like that feeling.
Yeah. it's hard to like, you know, I, you know, try to find the time to do both, you know, and then, I, you know, we've talked about this before on the show, but it's like, you know, what do you want to focus on? Right. Like, do you want to focus? Yeah. Like, I haven't really done a shoot for myself in this many months because I was doing the YouTube, which is not bad. I have fun doing that, too. But I miss, you know, like you said, you miss photography. I want it to be a bit more about that. So, like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to like having two passion projects, you know, and which comes first, or what do you put first, or, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. But Joan, how's your channel going? I saw there was a moment where you thought you were going to throw it all away or quit, huh?
Yeah, we had this conversation a week ago and coincidence, like I didn't even know I was going to meet you in person. So it kind of like went to full circle. So what you just said, pretty much I totally relate to. I was like on the groove of creating content every week, and then to the point where I just was like, okay, I think like I was kind of draining and or drowning in all of that, and then I stopped. And yeah, we just had this whole conversation because now there's a lot of up and coming YouTubers in the film community, and then I was like, oh no. Not that it was a bad thing, more like it got me inspired to want to come back. And so when I just came back from Nashville and I saw that you live in Tennessee.
I just saw that and I was like, what? Why didn't you text me? Come on.
Because like, it's my first time and I was there for a wedding. I was photographing a wedding that my sister was in. But at the same time, like I wasn't there too long. So I wish I could stay longer.
Yeah.
But
Next time you have to let me know.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, none of my friends knew I was going. So I didn't publicize it on Instagram. I know I told Chris just because, you know, we were talking on Instagram, but I didn't say that I was there because I just wanted to be present in the moment. And so I photographed and I just uploaded on YouTube, just the photos I shot in Nashville. And I actually was surprised because I don't really ever shoot landscape, but I was just like, you know, try to do something different. But yeah, when it comes to the whole YouTube topic, this gets deep. We had this whole conversation about, I don't even know, thank God this is all getting edited in different but we were talking about how there's not that much female representation on YouTube, especially in the film community. And it struck me one time when I got a comment that someone who would watch my videos was really happy in watching them because he wasn't watching a bearded man who looks hipster. And he said that was like refreshing, that it would be someone different. And I was like, you know, I understood what he meant, but I was surprised that he even like commented something like that. And at the same time, I think there's only like one female photographer, and I don't even really think she shoots analog, but like that's like the only person I've seen that really shows that they're dedicated into, you know, doing photography on YouTube. And so for me, when I created my YouTube channel, I just did it really seriously for fun. Like, yeah, I don't have the time, really, to be honest. Like, I'm a full-time student, I work as a freelance, so I don't have time to just do or dedicate all the extra time to just do YouTube. And I respect anyone who does that.
Yeah,
but so for me, I just did it for fun, and then I included like my friends and studio mates and whoever just wanted to be a part of it. And that's also how I met a lot of new friends, because they would watch me on YouTube and then they would want to hang out. And I was also mentioning that the new YouTubers who are coming out, like, they're in my area. It's not like we're in a different country. And some of them I met, you know, personally here and there, and they're nice people, but they've always seemed like a clique, and they've never seemed to, like, you know, reach out and like kind of want other people to join them on their, like, you know, photo hangouts and meetups. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, I love film photography because not only the fact that of the medium, but the people that I get to meet and collaborate with. And, you know, like, I just saw Chris's New York video and how it's just cool to just like be able to nerd out, right?
Yeah, that was so fun. That was so fun.
So for me, it's like these people that I would watch on YouTube, like, they seem so cool, and I think they are cool, and I'd like to hang out with them, but why do they seem so unapproachable? It's like, I've always thought celebrities are unapproachable, you know? But now with social media, things seem much more like it's able, possible. So the fact that there seems still like this gray area of a boundary that why we can't socialize, like, it kind of bothers me some, so that's why I kind of stopped making videos, because I didn't want to seem like I conformed to that.
Right.
And at the same time, now going back on YouTube and creating this video of me like venting how I feel, I was pretty much literally saying, like, I want people to reach out if they're in the area. I created a photo social club at my studio, which is not just restricted to Jersey people. I've even had people who came from New York, and they come. So I created a club that is like pretty much a monthly thing where people.
I love that.
So I always get this question. Literally, I feel like every photographer probably gets this question. It's like, oh, I do photography, but, like, you know, I'm scared to show it, but I want to show you. So it's kind of like some people get intimidated because they think that the only place they can show their photos are either to their friends or like on social media. But then they feel like it's not attainable to have it in a museum or an exhibition or whatever. And for me, I was just like, there are people who want to show what they photograph, whether it's on an iPhone or anything. And so I created the Photo Social Club so they could just bring their photos there and then just talk about it. And
I love that.
There's no judgment. And sometimes, like, it could get so vulnerable where people really want to express whatever story is behind these photos. And so, and then you feel better. Because you know, for example, I have a certain amount of photos that are related to a certain topic, let's say like anxiety. And then someone else came through with another bunch of photos about the same topic. You just never know that someone else in the same room as you relates to something that you're going through. And just on Instagram, unless they write it in their caption, or you just don't know what's the story behind their photography.
Yeah.
So I wanted to create a space for people to be able to just share their work, because I know that there's not just only the people we see on social media or on YouTube who are photographers. There are a lot of talented people, but they just don't know where to share their work.
Do you guys ever share work, speaking of sharing work, on the film photography, like, Facebook?
What do you mean? Wait, can you...
There's a film photography, Facebook group where you can just like share work, and I'm always like tempted to, but I'm so scared to share. Like you were saying, like people being scared to share work, it's like hi me, that's literally me. Like I'll show it on like my Instagram, but like then I'll like, oh, I'll like archive it because I don't think it like fits in with the rest of it, or like, you know, like that's like, you hit a nail on the head. That's really cool that you'd offer that to have people come and hang out and meet in real life and like share their work without judgment.
So when it comes to Facebook photography groups, that's another topic that I like to discuss that I don't participate in anymore. But I think one of the biggest photography Facebook groups is the negative feedback group. And for a lot of people are... I don't want to say scared. A lot of people are intimidated to post on that group because majority are male. And also there's this like sort of clickiness going on. And for me, I feel like I've always been like, if I'm confident in my work, if I know I'm happy with what I produce, then I don't really care if I post it and what people are going to say, because I know I gave my 100. However, I don't tolerate when people disrespect people's work. I feel that, you know, if you have something negative to say, like literally you could say it in a constructive way, but there's no need to bash somebody. And there have been many times on that group where people will feel bad and not want to, you know, post again. And that makes me sad, because despite I might not know these people, it's like, there's no one that needs to be shunned. It's just, you know, photos. And at the same time, it's like, let's say like if photography is the one thing that I love to do and you are the reason why that I don't do that anymore, that's really sad.
Yeah.
And that is sad. And I would never want to like make someone not want to, you know, go for their dreams. Like that's just very unfortunate. So for me, I always tell people, it's like, don't care about what people say. Like, literally, that's the most cliche thing ever. But it's literally like, if you really put your whole heart and soul into something, like, just post it. And for me, on that group especially, like, I would get a lot of likes when it, like, let's say, like, over 200. I remember I was in Hong Kong before I flew out. I posted the photos I shot and got back. And then I was like, I don't know what people are going to say. They're probably not going to like it. And I just came back. I came back from my flight. And then all of a sudden, it's like I get a ton of notifications. And it's not about the validation. It's just me just trying to, you know, I want everyone to pretty much, whoever's listening, is that you just never know. I think this whole conversation, it's like you never know. So you should never assume that everyone's going to not like your work.
Right.
Yeah. So regardless, just post it everywhere, because you never know what's going to happen.
I love that. And feel free to post it on the Analog Talk Facebook group, guys.
I mean, to be honest, I kind of like stop participating in any Facebook group. Just because, like, you know, for me, it's like, I don't know, even my Instagram is just my work, but also like I... to each their own. But for me, it's like, I don't like to post like everything that I'm up to or everything that I'm doing, because I just feel like in the end of the day, it's like no matter what I make will be relevant regardless if I show it now or later. So with Tim saying that he hasn't developed his photos, like, you know, it's not the end of the world if he doesn't show it right now.
Thank you.
Very true. Yeah, exactly.
Because now, Now I feel bad that I haven't developed these photos.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Joan right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code ANALOGTALK10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this question comes from our good buddy, Robert Lanes. He asks, Joan, do you have more joy from shooting film or shooting video?
I'm trying to think how I would answer that. Okay.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. So when it comes to film and video, kind of like what we said a little bit earlier, they're not really so different to me because I take it as stills and then just multiple stills combined into one. So, but as of right now, I enjoy more filming my short films than photographing stills, just because, like I said, I could elaborate more on my idea. Mm-hmm. So a project that I currently am working on is a short film that is about these young skaters who are, it's about illegal immigration. And at the same time, it's all in Spanish. I do not speak Spanish.
Wow.
And so I wanted to challenge myself because I always watch films and I kind of question when it's always like, let's say a black director with a black cast or like Crazy Rich Asians. Mm-hmm. And I have nothing against that. But for me, it's like, I understand the idea of, if let's say me, someone who's Asian, does a different type of film related to a different ethnicity, you know, there could be definitely a lot of complications. But I feel like if you do your research and you really, like, you know, do the pre-production well, then it shouldn't have a problem. But that's a film that we're going to actually shoot on Thursday. And I don't know when it's coming out. Yeah. And for me, it's like I wanted to focus more on social issues and like things that are happening nowadays that are occurring. And like I said, I just wanted to challenge and not just do something aesthetically pleasing or visually pleasing. That's because usually that's what I more focus on, and maybe that's because of my photography background that I do things more just think of the visual but not the narrative. So yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
so cool.
Great answer.
Yeah.
Man, so we had a not so film photography related question come in as well, and it was from at Max Huartas, and he wanted to know what your favorite movie was, which I kind of want to know too, since you're like the film buff.
To be honest, I'm not a film buff before until I... No, seriously. I used to feel bad because when I would start classes in regards to film, everyone would know the typical cult films. And I was like, I've never seen them. And then I had to like really, you know, sit down and like force myself to like watch films that we really, you know, always talk about. And at the same time, films that are like made way, way back before I was even born, I have to like even be educated or knowledgeable about. So definitely the way how I see films is totally different. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would like to give two choices, which is like one more modern and then one old school film. For me, it would be, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the director Wong Kar-wai. He does more Chinese cinematic films, and they're very, very dramatic, but the shots are so good, like the music score, everything. And a particular film is In the Mood for Love. I really, really like that film. Or Chungking Express. Yeah, those are two must watch films. And another one So the modern one would be Whiplash, because my other favorite director is Damien Chazelle. And I relate to Whiplash a lot, which people kind of start getting scared because they're like, why? Like, it was so intense. Like,
that's how intense photography is for us.
But my long story short, my birthday celebration last year was to host a film screening. And the film I chose was Whiplash. And I invited my art teacher. So this all correlates. So when I was in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to pursue. Originally, I wanted to do fashion design until I realized I didn't know how to, I didn't like sewing. And then so instead, that same teacher that I spoke about earlier, he, considering that I should do photography, he would always tell me like, to do better, and he would always be super strict about how I would draw, because I was in an art program. He would be very, very stern in how he would teach the class, and I would cry. I would cry because it'd be like so intense. And then so now that I am 27 and I hosted this film screening in regards to Whiplash, and I invited him so he could see.
Wow.
That, you know, that was kind of the impact that he had on me, but in a more positive light, where, you know, I now can look back 10 years later and respect the fact that the reason of how he would teach and stuff really got to me in a way where I'm more focused in what I do and I'm still doing photography. So, yeah.
I had a teacher like that.
Did you really? I was like racking my brain. None of my teachers were like that.
No.
I mean that guy in that movie was like brutal.
Yeah, no, my teacher was very brutal, but like he but nowadays it's like I would come over and visit his family, so like everything's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
awesome.
Speaking of Photo Plus, he like paid for one of my memberships 1 year because I really felt uninspired and I thought like photography was like not gonna work out. And so then he looked it up. He even though I've already been to Photo Plus before, but I never told him about it. But I guess he Googled. He's like maybe trying to find ways into like spark some like inspiration. And then he bought me a ticket. Awesome. Yeah,
that's great.
Oh, so I guess we got to give you the tough questions, the final questions.
So, Joan.
Okay.
If you could only pick one camera for the rest of your life on a desert island, can't get off, what would it be and why?
See, I don't want to give the cliche answer because I also like the cliche answer.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no cliche answers here.
No, but every time I hear an episode, see, I admit, see, this is proof that I listen to Analog Talk. So the fact that most of the photographers that answer this question always says a Leica M6, and I'm like, yeah, I agree sometimes too, you know, but I'm not going to go that route.
Ooh, okay.
Curveball.
Yeah, and then the other one I was also torn about is Mamiya 6, and I was like, what is with number 6? But so I don't know. It's hard because it's like, what am I, you know, what is my use for it? So for me, I think my one and only first love was always my Yashica Matte.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it's crazy because like sometimes I think about selling it and I'm like, oh man, I don't know. No. I think to a head where I'm like, if I have a family, all these things, like I want to like hand it down, but it's like, that's not even relevant right now. But out of all the cameras I've acquired, it's like the Yashica Matte is very like something that resonates with me, like, and I always, you know, carry everywhere no matter where I travel, and it's always an icebreaker conversation. But
yeah,
at the same time, sometimes I think about when I think about this question, I was like, oh man, when they ask me this, like, how am I gonna respond? And I think about like the, you know, the versatility and like what I would use it for. But in the end of the day, it's like I just go with my gut feeling, and that's going to be my answer.
Great answer.
That's a good answer. I'm glad you swung back around and said that one.
Yeah. It's a classic. Uh-huh. I mean, it's a classic. Man, so then what is your white whale? What are you lusting after? Is there anything that you've had your eye on for a while that you haven't gotten yet?
So that's literally the first two cameras that I mentioned, which is the M6 and the Mamiya 6. Like, those are the two cameras that I've always looked at every time I go into the camera store. Uh-huh. Or sometimes the Hasselblad too, the 500cm. I've shot with that a few times. But always, I don't know, it's always a rotation of those three cameras. The rest are, it's like, I would use it maybe once and then that's it. But those are the three cameras that I would always think about. And I know myself. It's like, if I set the goal, I will eventually get it. And I'm like, Oh yeah.
That's how it happens, man. You set your mind to it, and next thing you know, you're a proud owner.
You're like, my most accomplished moment. I bought that M6.
Well, no, but the thing is, it's like I said, the journey. It's all about the whole journey. And so it's like, if I already end up getting those cameras, it's like, what's next? And then I feel like that's all.
And I agree with that, because I feel like for the longest time, I too was like, I'm buying an M6. I'm just going to put my mind to it and I'm going to make it happen. You know, I'm just going to stop buying all these little rinky dink cameras and I'm just going to wait. And it's going to happen. And now I kind of feel like I'm at the point where I'm just going to wait it out. And if it happens, it happens. Because what I have, my little arsenal right now, is like so perfect for what I do. Like, I haven't really been lusting lately, you know? Yeah. I'm just kind of like chilling.
You're lucky, like, and because it's all I've been doing lately is lusting.
It happens, though. It comes in waves. Like, next week, I'm sure I'll be like, man, what was I thinking? Like, when I'm editing this, I'll be like, I'm a moron. Like, I must have been having a good night of not wanting a camera, but I just feel like lately I've just felt really content, you know? And not to say that things don't just stumble across, like the last camera I bought, it just kind of stumbled on, fell on my lap. So I bought it. And I don't know, if I'm meant to have an M6 or like a Hasselblad, it's meant to be in my life. Like, it'll just, I think it's going to happen. So just like everything else has happened, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I pretty much said earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you said earlier. Yeah. Like, it'll happen upon you at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So just say like a prayer. Like, I wanna Pentax 645. Yeah. I wanna Konica Big Mini. I wanna Photo Gods, please.
It's funny though, because it's true. Like, when I was really like ready to pull the trigger on some like really good large format gear, like the Toyo Field 4.5 just fell onto my lap. Like, it literally fell out of the sky, showed up at my door, and there it was. You know what I mean? So like, that shit happens. Like, it happens. Just let it happen. And like, you don't need to like it to be cool. I mean, hell yeah, they're awesome. And like, you'll probably never need to buy another camera again if you have it. But I feel like it's going to happen. Like, if you stick with it, if you want it, you know, like, it's just going to happen.
So true.
At least that's what I'm saying. Please let that happen.
Anyway. Awesome. Yeah, Joan, this has been so awesome. Thank you for taking the time to join us. We're glad we got you on.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, this is like surreal. Like, 1 week I met you. Next week I'm on Analog Talk. Like,
that's right.
What's next?
That's how we do it.
Joan, where can everybody check out your work?
So I have my website, which is joan-michelle.com, and then my Instagram and everything else is Joan Michelle.
Nice. Awesome. Timothy, what about you?
All right, guys, you can find me on Instagram at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography related YouTube videos. I don't know, I think 2017 was the last time I posted a video. But just go to the search bar, type in Timothy.makeups. I promise some stuff's on the way. Chris, where are you?
So I am Crispy Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group you can join and share your work. And yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Thank you again, Joan. This was so fun. And
thanks, Joan.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
First off, we want to thank Joan for being on the show. Joan, thanks for talking about your schooling, your video work, your love for cameras, all that fun stuff. We really loved having you on the show. It was great getting to meet you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon.
head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of tiers over there. We're going to be releasing shows on Mondays, 2 days early, starting at the beginning of the year. We are still working on live streams. We realized that we can do live streams through Patreon, so we're finally breaking down the kinks and figuring this whole thing out, and we're going to be doing live streams with Patreons only, along with starting a Patreon-only Facebook group, so you guys have direct contact with us with any questions. If you guys have any photography-related stuff you want to talk about, you will be in the group with Chris and I. So yeah, keep a lookout for that. That is all probably coming out right around the beginning of the new year, right when we release, you know, kind of our new season of shows after our Christmas break. So keep a lookout for that. If you haven't joined Patreon, think about joining. It's the best way to help our show. So yeah, guys, patreon.com/analogtalk. And until next week, we have a bunch of shows lined up before the end of the year. So get ready for that. Chris and I appreciate each and every one of you for listening, and we will see you next week. Later, guys.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.